Blog Talk Radio.
During the 2016 presidential campaign, your current president referred to accusations of sexual harassment as a nothing burger. As you've likely heard, the Republican memo has been referred to the same way. There's no showing at all of FBI or Justice Department misconduct in obtaining a warrant to wiretap Carter Page. Remember the old advertising slogan, "Where's the beef?" In the meantime, where's the Democratic Party's memo? It's being held up by Trump for further review by the Justice Department. Don't hold your breath. Bragging about the stock market's rise since he was elected. Are we to assume that he's going to take credit for the current volatility after a 10% drop that recently took place? Yeah, I didn't think so. And speaking of financial markets, we've been seeing both the Dow 30 and bond prices go down. We'll explain what's unusual about that and re-explain what we said a few weeks ago about why inflation and higher interest rates result from the tax bill that recently became law. Actor John Gavin has died at age 86. Gavin was in films such as Spartacus and the original Psycho. Last week, the Polish parliament passed a law which its prime minister is expected to sign that would make it illegal to say that Poland participated in the Holocaust. Are you bloody kidding me? That would be like making it illegal to say the Dodgers beat the White Sox in the 1959 World Series. They both happened, folks, though 1959 is slightly less depressing. We'll talk a bit about Polish anti-Semitism during and after World War II. The Federal Reserve Board recently ordered Wells Fargo to stop growing until it changes some systems so they can't abuse customers again. Hey, Fed, it's Wells Fargo. What were you expecting? Also, the flu is breaking records in terms of the number of people suffering and dying, though it's nothing compared to 1918. We'll talk about that and a couple of ways of protecting yourself if you're not hearing too much. As you know, a couple of weeks ago was Martin Luther King Day. The President of the United States normally does volunteer service work to honor Dr. King on that holiday. This year, the president played golf on that day. As one commentator said, that's like the whitest sport possible. Previous presidents have at least made a show of honoring civil rights on that day, but not the guy who appeals to white racists. No, ma'am. The White House staff secretary has stepped down. This is a man who couldn't get security clearance due to credible claims of having abused, physically as well as mentally, two former wives. Supposedly, people who don't get security clearances can't get that job because they see all kinds of top secret documents and information in that job. Now that the news has come out, this guy stepped down and Trump has named a replacement. That's the good news. The bad news is that the replacement is Harvey Weinstein. Kidding. Finally, the president of the Humane Society of the United States has resigned after accusations were made saying that he had committed acts of sexual harassment. Although nothing was proven, he resigned after charging that several sheep and a couple of cows greatly exaggerated what had occurred. Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. That would be me. Tonight we'll talk about those stories and ask about the day in history and essays. That is, we'll ask you, and you're welcome to call in. If you'd like to call in either now or during the remainder of the time we have, which will probably be less than the full hour show tonight, feel free to do that. And the call-in number, should you desire to do that and participate, would be 646-668-2953, repeating while you grab your pen, 646-668-2953. Okay. So there are a couple of things we want to mention before we talk about all the news items and the economy and the stock market and bond market and all of that good stuff. First off, those of you who are animal lovers and heard the show last week will be happy to know that our producer, Autumn Bushman, who is also a Chihuahua, is here in the studio with us. And she's busily working on production of the program. I wanted to again bring to your attention and spend just a wee bit more time than usual talking about Patreon.com. Patreon is a site which allows listeners who wish to support podcasts and other, I hesitate to use this word, but artistic endeavors, or let's say creative endeavors, that's better, to help support the programs and the, again, other creative endeavors. It's patreon.com, repeating, patreon.com. Like the word patron, but there's an E before the O, okay, .com. And our specific page is patreon.com/Jeff Bushman, all one word. The reason I'm mentioning it to you is because there has not been, frankly, a lot of participation. We've gotten a lot more listeners, and we have listeners, much to my surprise, all over the world. But not a lot of people have gone to the Patreon page to go ahead and throw a few shekels our way. So let me ask you, if you have listened to more than a couple of programs and have found it generally to your liking, outside of the area of objections you might have, if you wouldn't mind just throwing, say $1 a month at the program. Eventually, the goal is to be able to put on more programs, and that support would be helpful in that direction, not just more of this program, but other programs. We are starting another one in a couple of weeks, and then we have some other ideas with some other hosts in mind for those programs. But like everything else, production doesn't take a lot of money, but it does take some. So we invite you to participate in that at patreon.com/Jeff Bushman, and it also will help give validation when we are seeking sponsors, which we have not yet done. Okay. Also in the self-advertisement area, in the book industry, and obviously the book industry has changed, the publishing industry has changed a great deal over the last certainly 5 years, 10 years. I have 3 books up at the Amazon.com website that are there as Kindle books. You can look me up and find those books. One of them is called The Mobile Millionaire. Another one is called Bobby's Been Shot. The latter is a novel, and the former is a book on mobile home investment. In any event, of the 3 that I have up there, Mobile Millionaire is the biggest seller. And I will tell you that the average book in a bookstore sells about 12 copies a year. That, of course, includes the Stephen King blockbusters and the book that somebody wrote on the love life of amoeba. The average is 12 a year. We did over 10 times that last year. So thank you to all of those of you who have done that. And presumably, and again, that may not sound like a lot of books, but for someone who is not famous, that's actually very good. And when I say that, it's not bragging. It's as surprising to me as it is to anybody. If you are interested in any of those topics or just taking a look at them, and you can look at an excerpt, you're welcome to do that at that page, Amazon.com, and look it up under Jefferson Bushman or Jeff Bushman, and you should be able to find it. Or you can just look up The Mobile Millionaire and see the other books as well. Okay. Now let's talk about the news items. We talked about the fact that the Republican memo, which was designed to make it look like the FBI and the Mueller investigation and anything else that is being investigated or is anyone else who's doing any investigating with regard to President Trump and Russia, there's no collusion, there's no collusion. The design of the Republican memo was to make it look like those were biased and therefore they should be shut down. It didn't have that effect. It really isn't nothing but it doesn't demonstrate anything. And the Democrats came out with a memo to refute that. A couple of different things happened. First off, Congressman Nadler of New York, who's a Democrat, came out with his own, which ran about 10 pages. But the Democrats on the Intelligence Committee, and it was the Republicans on the Intelligence Committee, who, first off, are a contradiction in terms, but the Democrats on that committee came out with their own memo
and it's about 6 pages. The Republican was 4. So just in terms of sheer volume, we win. But in any event, Donald Trump, who has to sign off on the release of it, as he did with the Republican memo, because some of the material referred to is classified, now says he wants the Justice Department to review it. So that's what's going to happen, and as I said in the lead, I wouldn't expect that to happen anytime soon. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'll be surprised. And maybe I'll play basketball for the NBA. Okay. We mentioned the stock market, and we'll talk more about this in just a moment. First, I want to say that the fundamental fact is presidents, whether it's Trump, Obama, well, actually, there's an exception there, but Trump or Bush or Clinton or Reagan or name somebody, Kennedy, Johnson, I don't care. Presidents rarely have any direct effect on the nation's economy or the stock market for beyond a day. The truth is the president doesn't have a whole lot of tools in his or someday her tool chest. There's just not there. There's not a lot the president can do to boost or damage the economy. Now, there are exceptions. George W. Bush didn't cause the recession, the so-called Great Recession, but until very late in his term, he didn't do anything useful to get us out right away. Right at the end of the term, he did. He and Secretary of the Treasury Paulson did a good deal in terms of creating tools that helped ease the problem and helped prevent us falling into a very, very much more serious depression, as did Obama. But in Obama's case, he also had, to be honest, he had the help. I like Obama, but he had the help of Congress, at that time a Democratic Congress. He still couldn't get through all the spending he wanted. The recession could have ended earlier and more easily, but at least those processes were begun. Another person who had an effect on two other people, presidents I can think of, who did have an effect on the economy, again, with help, were Hoover and Franklin D. Roosevelt. In the case of Hoover, both he and the Congress did mostly the wrong things because they really didn't understand what needed to be done. It wasn't purposeful. Same thing, by the way, with Bush when I said something negative. And Roosevelt and the Democratic Congress beginning in 1933 actually did a good deal towards helping the economy out of the Great Depression. Now, a lot of Republican conservatives will tell you that the Depression ended because of World War II. Well, that's partly true, frankly, but it was also because what was done in World War II was just the New Deal on steroids. The New Deal did a lot of government spending, deficit spending, and that put a lot more money into the economy, which helped create jobs. In the case of the war, even prior to our entry into the war, we were gearing up and putting a lot more people to work. In jobs that would help in the war, but also would help outside the war by putting more money into the economy in that preparation period, that caused other jobs to develop as a result. In other words, if someone was working in a defense plant building airplanes at a massive rate, which is what the United States did, say in 1940, beginning in 1940, we didn't enter the war until the end of 41. What we did, though, had the effect of, as I say, putting people to work. So if you had a job at a defense plant, you could then go buy clothing and a widget, which would cause more jobs to be created in the widget factory, in the clothing factory. So the fact is, if you want to talk about it in this way, Keynesian economic theory was proven to work. So, as I say, Roosevelt and the Congress did have an effect. Now, if you look at other positive times in the economy, if you look at the Clinton years, for example, Bill Clinton, who you can admire or dislike, doesn't matter. The truth of the matter is, although the economy was good during those years, he had relatively little to do with it. The good news is he didn't do anything to screw it up. But, you know, the same thing, by the way, is true of Trump. Trump has had very little to do with the positive effects in the U.S. economy, but he hasn't done anything to screw it up except for the tax bill, which we'll come back to in just a minute. In the meantime, let's talk about Poland. As mentioned, the Polish parliament passed a law, and the prime minister either has signed it or is going to, and it makes it illegal to suggest that Poland participated in the Holocaust. Let me remind you that a lot of the people who worked at Auschwitz, which was in Poland, were Polish staff members, Polish soldiers, and they were Nazis. Poles did participate in the Holocaust. Okay, it's real simple. It's just the reality. The Polish government was a Nazi government after the invasion in September of 1939, and for the entire war, Poland had a Nazi government, as did several other countries. They were puppets of Germany. But I will tell you about a somewhat personal experience. It really isn't. But when I was in high school, my teacher for, I want to say government, but I believe it was American history, she was a Holocaust survivor. And she had the tattoo on her arm and the whole thing. She had lived in Russia during the war and after. Russia, Poland, Hungary, and a couple of other countries I don't remember, and obviously ultimately the United States. And she said that even in Germany, they were not as anti-Semitic as they were in Poland, in her experience. Obviously, her experience was limited to the people around her. But she said if you talk to anybody who lived, any Jew who lived in Poland during World War II, and who lived elsewhere at some point in that period, they will tell you that it was worse in Poland than anywhere else. The Poles were extremely anti-Semitic during the war. And afterwards, when there were no Jews in Poland, and particularly after the communists fell, Poland initially tried to get away from its anti-Semitic image, and they had Jewish-themed restaurants with no Jews in them, among other things. And they talked about how great Jewish people were and blah, blah, blah. Since then, Poland and Hungary, among other countries that were formerly communist countries, many of the former communist countries, by the way, have what you would call social democratic governments, that is, left-center or slightly right-center governments. But Poland and Hungary both have governments, parliamentary parties that were elected to lead the governments that are pretty far right. It's not like they're Nazis, but they're very, very conservative. And this bill that has become or will become law shortly in Poland, saying it's illegal to say that Poland participated in the Holocaust, good Lord, you've got to be kidding. That's just insane. Okay. In other news, I do want to come back to the economy, but I wanted to talk about the flu first. The flu is all over the country, this country. I don't know if it's around the world. I mention that because we do have listeners elsewhere. We're the highest rated show, by the way, in Norway, that among those shows that are hosted by a Moldavian Ukrainian host. But the flu in 1918, which was known as the swine flu, probably named after, never mind, that was an unfortunate joke. But anyway, the swine flu spread around the world in 1918 and killed millions of people, lots of them here in this country. And it was so bad that you could be very healthy and a young person in the morning, you could be dead of flu by the evening. It was that bad. In some ways, worse than the bubonic plague. And all kinds of remedies were tried to help overcome it, none of which worked until the virus died out. Okay, talking about the flu, antibiotics will not help against the flu. Why? Because the flu is not a bacteria, and antibiotics only work against bacteria. They don't work against viruses. Same reason why antibiotics do nothing for a cold. The only time you get antibiotics is when you kind of demand one from your doctor and the doctor has no testicles. And I mean that in a metaphorical sense, not a biological sense. I didn't want it to sound like an anti-woman comment. But the fact is, antibiotics do no good for a flu. There are antivirals that can do some good about good against the flu, but not always. The flu shot that has been out this year is not terribly effective because when they were making the vaccine, they guessed wrong about the strain of the flu, which is not a criticism. The truth is it's kind of impossible to guess right all the time. In most years, they do a fairly good job. I have never had a flu shot. I don't intend to get one. I get the flu about every 3 years, I think, maybe every 4 years. It may sound like I have it now because my throat's getting hoarse, which reminds me let me invite you to call in so we don't have to just listen to me talk, and I don't have to just talk. The calling number, if you wish to participate, is 646-200-4444, repeating 646. I'm sorry, that's the wrong number. Let me try that again. The number to call in, I got the first part right, 646. I was looking at something else. The rest of the number is 668-2953. Repeating 646-668-2953. Okay, so let me talk about how to protect yourself from the flu. The first thing that everybody is already telling you, and is correct, but it sounds a little bit counterintuitive, is wash your hands. Now, why? What people tend to think is if I wash my hands and I've touched something, I won't spread the flu to other people. While that's true, that's not the reason you're washing, that's not the only reason you're washing your hands. By washing your hands with some frequency, what happens is, if you have touched something that's been contaminated by flu, by the flu virus, or you've shaken hands with somebody who has the flu, even if they don't know it, the tendency is for all of us to occasionally touch our eyes or our nose or our mouths, and that's a path through which we get the flu. Okay, so if you wash your hands frequently, you are going to be less likely to get the flu or to spread it to others. Okay, but another thing you can do, and I have awareness that some people don't agree with this, that's life. There's a lot of good science that suggests the following. Take more vitamin C. I'm not saying drink more orange juice. I'm saying take vitamin C, and here's why. That's my bottle of vitamin C that's at my desk, and this bottle contains pills that are 1,000 milligrams, okay? An orange, when it's just picked, has 55 milligrams of vitamin C. One of those pills has 1,000. I know you can do the math. It's probably like 19 times. It may be 20. It's a little less than 20 anyway. 18 or 19 times the amount of vitamin C that's in a just-picked orange is in one of those pills. Additionally, vitamin C is very sensitive to time, heat, and light. So by the time it gets to your grocery store, a lot of the vitamin C has left. Then it's stored on the shelves waiting for you to pick it up and buy it and eat it. It's been there for additional time, and it's also been exposed to light. And if you happen to, and when I said it's temperature sensitive too, that's both to heat and cold. So whether your store is being kept too cold for whatever reason, or it's hot when you go outside, and yes, I know it's February, but still, those things also cause the vitamin C in an orange to deteriorate, or anything else that has vitamin C in it. So taking a pill where the vitamin is bound in by additives. The additives aren't the best thing for you, but at least you're getting more vitamin C. Okay, why vitamin C? Vitamin C has an effect. Most nutritionists and scientists will tell you this. Not the registered dietitian or your family physician, but you know, a naturopath or other nutritional scientist will tell you. Vitamin C taken in sufficient amounts, we can talk about that in a minute, will cause the membranes outside the cells to harden, that is, to become more impervious. The reason that's important is the way that viruses multiply is they go inside your cell and they use the cell's mitochondria to reproduce, and they continue reproducing until the virus essentially gets tired. That's ascribing human characteristics or animal characteristics to a virus that doesn't have them. But conceptually, until the virus gets tired and starts deteriorating, it continues to reproduce using your cell's mitochondria, and that's how you get sick. If you make the membrane more impervious to the virus will have more trouble reproducing and will tire out sooner. And sometimes you won't get sick at all, and if you do get sick, it'll tend to make you better faster. The old joke is that if you take a lot of vitamin C, a cold or flu will last 7 days, and if you don't, it'll last a week. The truth is, I can tell you from experience, that's not the case, although it's not exactly a controlled experiment. They have done controlled experiments where that has been demonstrated. So, how much vitamin C should you take? Well, I'm not a doctor. I'm not telling you what to do. I'll tell you what I do. When the flu is running rampant as it is now, I try to, and sometimes succeed, at taking about 1,000 milligrams an hour. Any more than that, according to the research that Linus Pauling did, is a waste. And there are people who will tell you, pardon me, that 1,000 milligrams an hour is more than the body could use and you're just creating expensive urine. That's not quite true because while it's in the body, before it escapes, it's doing you some good in terms of affecting those cell membranes. It does some other good things too, which is too complicated for today's show. But at least if you do that, you become less likely to get the flu, and you become more likely to get rid of it faster. Now, is 1,000 milligrams an hour too much? Well, you can tell if it is, because if it is for you, and everybody varies, but if it's too much for you, your stomach will act in a way that causes you to make a lot of trips, okay? If that happens, cut back to 1,000 every 2 hours or every 3 hours. That's how you know you've taken too much. And if every 2 or 3 hours it's not affecting your stomach, you might want to increase it slightly. But again, use your judgment. Use your stomach as a guide. But you should definitely be washing your hands and taking more vitamin C, okay? That's it. Let's talk now about the markets. The stock market has been going, but before Trump was elected, the stock market was on an upswing. After he was elected, that increased, okay? Whether that's because people who were investors thought he was going to do wonders for the economy, or it was just a continuation of a good mood, or business people were happy that Hillary wasn't elected, I don't know. But it has gone up, no question about it. And it reached a high about, a week or 10 days ago, something like 26,000 points on the Dow Jones Industrials. Okay, now it's hit some volatility, and it's generally gone down. Today, which is Friday, the 9th of February, it went up. By the way, today, we're speaking of today in history, I believe, though I'm not positive, that it was February 9th, 1971, when I was in an earthquake in Los Angeles, and a rather scary one at that. And you may want to look that up, February 9th, 1971, earthquake. I'm pretty sure that was the date. Somebody can tell me at some point. But anyway, the thing I was going to say to you is that today the market went up $300. It started out the day up 300, then it went down below where it had been by 300, so that was a 600-point loss, and then it made that up, and it closed up ultimately around 300 points. Bonds have also been going down. In addition to the stocks, today was what some investors call a dead cat bounce, a horrible term. But what it means essentially is the market is not going to be doing well, but it kind of sucks you in by going up a little bit every few days and then starts its downward trend again. I'm not sure that's the case, but that's the expression that's used for that. But the fact that the bond market has also been going down reflects why the stock market is going down. So let's talk about that a little bit. About right when they were passing the tax bill on this program, I talked about the fact that once the tax bill was passed into law and started to affect the economy, one of the things that was a concern was an increase in inflation and interest rates. I did not predict, I said that correctly. What I didn't say correctly is I said nothing at all about the stock market because it never even occurred to me to mention. Had it occurred to me, I would have said what's happening now would happen, but it really didn't occur to me. I'm not credited for that. But the inflation and interest concerns were addressed at that time. And now, of course, with the market going crazy, a lot of people said that's the reason. Here's why all that happens. Okay, this, by the way, would be one of the few places where video is better than audio because I could take a whiteboard and draw arrows all over the place, and it would make me look like I know what I'm talking about. But the interest rates and inflation, or the other way around, inflation followed by higher interest rates, is a concern for this reason. That is the reason why it becomes a concern. The tax cut bill puts a lot of money in the pockets of the wealthy and a little bit of money in the pockets of the middle class, okay? What that means, rather obviously, is more people have more money to spend. Arguably for the middle class, it's very temporary because they didn't put in a long-term tax cut for the middle class, just for the wealthy, and more particularly for corporations. So what happens with that is when you put more money into the pockets of people, that means more people will spend more money. Now, when you have a recession, as we did in 2009, 2010, et cetera, this would have been a very good idea. In fact, Obama and Congress cut taxes and increased spending both. We needed at least those two things and maybe more. But that puts more money into the economy. Well, when you have high unemployment, when you have a recession overall, that is when the gross domestic product goes down instead of up, then you should be doing those things because they stimulate the economy and ends up putting more people back to work and spending money in the marketplace and netting still more jobs and so on and so forth. Right now, our unemployment rate is so low that a lot of economists talk about it as full employment. There will never be, in fact, absolutely full employment. That would be 100% of people working who want to work. But the unemployment rate is something like 4%, maybe a little less. Actually, it's 4%, period, or maybe 4%, 4.1, 4.2, something like that. That's considered by economists to be full employment because there are so few people out of work who, relative to the economy who want to work that the only way you get new employees is by paying more money. This is also why you've seen a slight jump in wages, and it is anticipated that you're going to see a higher jump in wages. Everything is based on supply and demand, including labor, so, or if you prefer, people. So when you have low unemployment and you want to hire a new pizza delivery driver, you may have to pay him or her more than the standard minimum wage because if you don't, someone else will, and you won't get that person. Employment is high, you can pay the minimum wage because people are just glad to be able to get a job at any wage. When they can get jobs in a number of places that pay more than minimum wage, some places, by the way, some McDonald's are now paying like $16 an hour, which is way above the minimum wage anywhere, because that's the only way they can get and retain staff, okay? And you're going to see more and more of that as time goes by. That, by the way, was true, I don't know about the specific $15, $16 an hour, but that was true during the Clinton administration. Unemployment was very low. Wages kept going up. That, of course, changed later. But the result was that people had to pay a lot more money to get and retain staff. That's happening now, or it's in the process of beginning now. So when you pass this tax bill that reduces a lot of people's taxes and there's more money in the economy, when factories are producing at top level, the only thing that happens after that is prices go up. There's actually something called, besides supply and demand, there's also something called the demand-price curve in classic economic theory. But here's basically what happens in simple language. Probably in Spanish would be simpler language, I don't know. But anyhow, what happens in basic terms is, let's assume you're the owner of a factory that produces widgets, okay? The economy has gotten better, so you've put on a third shift. Lots of people want to buy your widgets. So you've just put on a third shift, okay? When you put on that third shift, right away, there's still a lot of people who want to buy your widgets at the price you've been offering, which is a dollar, okay? When you've got your third shift fully working, and you're the only producer of widgets in the country, to make this simple, you're the only producer of widgets, you've got all three shifts working, and you don't have any room to put anybody else. Every position is filled, okay? Now, what do? Because people still want more widgets than you can produce. What do you do? Well, one thing you can do is build another factory, but that takes time. But what you can do if you want to make more money as the owner of the widget factory and you're producing all the widgets you can and you're selling them all, you raise your prices. In the real world, all the producers of widgets who are working at full capacity when widgets are still a hot item, say, for example, instead of widgets, you're talking about cell phones, then what you do is you raise prices on the product. And when you raise prices and people are continuing to pay that, then you're continuing to produce as much as you can and they still want more, you raise your prices more. You keep raising your prices effectively until sales and desire meet each other. But the effect, production may end up exceeding demand. But, because that's not an exact science, okay? So what happens then is you are making more money for producing the same thing. You're also paying more money to retain your staff to other jobs where the pay is greater if you don't. So that's how inflation is created. It's also how wages go up. And when wages go up in the general economy, that too is a situation which causes more inflation because when the wages go up, the producers of the widgets have more money to go buy cars and clothing and a nicer house, furniture, etc. So when you have cut the taxes, that's in a large amount, as they did, in an economy that is booming along already, that's what happens. The other thing that people are concerned about, I had mentioned this previously, but today was the first day I actually heard somebody on the radio mention this, which is supposedly sometime this year, the president is going to propose, and Congress presumably will pass, an infrastructure improvement bill. Okay, this is roads, bridges, highways, etc. If you've driven anywhere in this country, you know that we desperately need infrastructure improvement. And when Obama was president and had a Republican Congress, he tried to get that done, and you know what didn't happen. Now Trump is proposing it with a Republican Congress, and they will probably pass it. The problem is that the only way you get – and by the way, like I said, the roads, bridges, et cetera, definitely need it. The economy doesn't, okay? And the problem becomes the same thing we talked about before. How are you going to build infrastructure? Well, you're going to spend money. You're going to hire people to hire. The unemployment rate is so low. Well, the answer is you're going to hire people who have some experience, hopefully, but even some who don't, who currently may be working at McDonald's or Jack in the Box or someplace like that, and they are already getting a paycheck that they can live with. You're going to have to offer them more. Well, again, when you offer them more, some people who are geared to construction will come and work to build the bridges and the roads and the highways, etc. Those who don't will be able to command a higher buck than McDonald's and Jack in the Box. And that's what we call the beginning of inflation. And that's what people are scared about. So we then come to the question of, okay, that explains why fear has driven the stock market down. It hasn't had much effect on the economy at this point, but it has driven the stock market down. So, and because what happens with inflation, let me add to this. Once you have inflation in the marketplace, those of you who are old enough to remember the Carter and Ford administrations know this. Once you have that in place, the Federal Reserve Board, to dampen inflation, and that's a good idea because inflation is very corrosive, especially to poor people who have to pay more money for the same stuff, and their income doesn't go up as quickly as everybody else's. So you want to keep inflation in control, and that's part of the that's one of the two main jobs of the Federal Reserve Board. So they come in and they increase interest rates, and that means that people who would borrow money from banks have to pay more interest on that money. Why is that a problem? Well, it's a problem for business because it increases their costs, as does higher labor, right? So they end up having to charge more, which, again, is problematic. But a lot of times they won't borrow, so they can't expand their company. They can't, if you will, add another shift to the widget factory. So what ends up happening is when the interest rates go up high enough to stifle inflation, the economy tends to go into a tailspin. And that's the fear that has manifested itself in the volatile stock market. Okay? But the other thing is that's interesting is the bond market. Normally, if you're an investor, you're a big deal investor, okay? You're not just, you know, throwing $50 a month in the stock market. If you're a big deal investor and you normally invest in stocks, which are sometimes called equities. If you're normally investing in stocks, instead of investing in stocks, if the stock market's going down, the tendency is to invest in bonds. What's a bond? A bond is where a corporation is essentially issuing an agreement that if you give them $1,000, they're going to pay you X percent interest over the next year or two or however long the bond is. With interest rates on bonds is when interest rates go up, the bond price goes down, okay? And on bonds, a lot of times the interest rate is anticipatory. That is, it's not the current rate at the bank or on treasury bills of the U.S. government. Rather than that, it anticipates that interest rates will go up or down, and those interest rates adjust accordingly. Well, now the interest rates on bonds have been going up because of what we were just talking about, the anticipation that inflation is going to take hold and that interest rates generally are going to go up, making the cost of money higher so that inflation is stifled. Well, interest rates have been going up on bonds and prices on bonds, therefore, have been going down. Interest rates and bond prices move, the mathematicians call that inversely. meaning as bond prices go up, well, let me change that. As interest rates go down, bond prices go up. As interest rates go up, bond prices go down. Here's why. If you buy a $1,000 bond today and it's paying, say, 2%, okay, 2% of $1,000, please, if I'm wrong, forgive me, but I think that's 20 bucks a year. And obviously the big deal investors are investing far more. There's a lot more zeros on these numbers than what I'm talking about. So the $1,000 bond, 5%, $1,000 for that bond. Now that bond is normally what's called negotiable, meaning I can sell it on the open market. So if interest rates go up suddenly, this doesn't happen, but I'm using it for illustrative purposes. If the interest rate suddenly goes up to 10%, that means that somebody can come along and buy a new bond at a rate of 10%. So instead of getting $20, they're going to get on that $1,000, $100. Did I do that right? I don't think so. 5% to 10%. So if it goes up to 10%, instead of getting the 5%, the 5% would have been, I beg your pardon, the 5% would have been $50. What I just said before was wrong. So, oh, I think because I said 2%. Okay. So let's say it's 5% and 10%. It's easier to figure. For me, anyway. So if the bond price originally is 5% on my $1,000, I'll get $50 for the year. Okay, now the bond price suddenly goes up to, the bond interest rate goes up to 10%, so I can go invest $1,000 somewhere else on another bond and get $100 for the year. That makes the bond I'm already holding that only pays 5% worth half as much. Why? Because if I, now to get that same $50, I only need to spend $500 because bonds are now paying 10%. On a new bond, I can just spend $500 and get that same $50. That makes my bond for $1,000 worth half as much if the interest rate doubles. Well, interest rates don't double that fast, but they do go up or down. Likewise, by the way, if the interest rate goes down, my bond, which is paying a higher rate of interest, is now more valuable. Okay? So that's what happens. Well, what's happened now is the stock market has gone down, but bond markets have gone down too because they anticipate that interest rates are going to go up. Therefore, the value of bonds that are paying a lower interest rate therefore goes down because people can get more money for a higher interest rate bond. Okay, that's basically it. So that's what's happening with the economy, and it's all currently related to the tax bill that the Republican-dominated Congress has passed, along with the anticipation of a possible infrastructure bill that may be coming later this year. Okay, that's basically it. Boy, is that complicated. Actually, it really isn't complicated. It sounds complicated, but if you could see charts and so forth, it actually is pretty easy, pretty simple. Okay. We have an email address. It's tjbradio, Tom John Boy, tjbradio@gmail.com. I'm mentioning that because I'm going to ask you a question, and if you'd like to respond, you can do so at that email address, again, tjbradio@gmail.com. Okay, here's the question. Those of you who listened last week know that Alicia, my lovely bride, is going to be starting a show in a couple of weeks on things, I guess the best way to describe it is things spiritual. And that might also involve numerology, astrology, and all kinds of stuff. But anyway, I am thinking about starting an additional show that would be basically once a week initially. Two shows, actually. One of them would be the day or week in history. It would be like a five-minute snippet of the day in history about a particular event on a day in history during the given week. So, for example, I mentioned a moment ago the February 9th, 1971 earthquake. So this week I might talk about that and the damage that was done and how it changed building codes or so forth. And just talking about that for about 5 minutes. That would be show one, this day or this week in history. Okay. The other one is a show which would be nothing more than about a five-minute essay. And one that I've already written, which is somewhere in this pile of papers in front of me that I can't currently find. Anyway, one that I've currently written talks about the death of a friend and how it was believed at one point to have been murder and turns out to have been a heart attack. It's a moderately interesting story, but it is essentially an essay that as I say, I have already written, and that people might find interesting. There would also be other subjects about, again, about politics and other matters. I'd like to know what you think of it. Is it worth listening to? And because obviously I don't want to waste my time. But if it's something you'd like to comment on, like, are you kidding, you idiot? I have enough of you once a week on this show. That would be fine. But if you think it would be something interesting or not, we'd appreciate hearing from you at tjbradio@gmail.com. In any event, we technically have about 14 minutes left in the program. We started about 30 seconds late today because everything was running late today. And I will invite a call again if you're interested, and then I'll wait about 2 minutes. And if there are no calls, we'll probably end the show early. But if you'd like to do that, it is 646-668-2953. And that basically is about it. Next week, we have specifically nothing planned, and we are going to take the week off. So, by the way, one other thing to write to us about at tjbradio@gmail.com is we have also thought about changing the night of this show, the live presentation, which won't matter to most people because most people listen to us in the podcast edition, that is pre-recorded, but after we've done the live show on Friday night. So instead, if we change it to Thursday night, which is what we're thinking about, you could begin hearing it sooner in the week, but other than that, I don't think it makes much difference to people. If you have an opinion to express on that, that would also be appreciated at tjbradio@gmail.com. Okay, so that's that. But next Friday and Thursday and every other day next week, we will be off of the show. The following week, we expect to have a guest, which will be announced later. And we're working on that right now. So that's basically about it. Seeing the massive number of calls that are coming in, we are going to end early so I can save my voice and frankly get back to work. I will, and let me mention to any of you are in Arizona or have process serving needs in Arizona, you can contact our company at Lighthouse Attorney Service, also at Gmail. Lighthouse Attorney Service, that's Lighthouse that brings in boats, attorney-like lawyer and service, Lighthouse Attorney Service at gmail.com. That said, we wish you a very pleasant couple of weeks. Who knows what's going to happen during that period of time? The obvious question is, 2 weeks from tonight, which is going to be the 23rd, will Donald Trump still be president? My bet is yes, and I expect you believe the same thing. So in the meantime, I want to wish you a very pleasant couple of weeks. Have a good evening, a good week, a good 2 weeks, as I said. And although you're going away, please don't go away mad. Be kind to each other, and somewhere in this country or in the world, it's around midnight. Good night, everybody.